Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text Number 3. Vidura's talks with Maitreya. Janasya Krishna Vimukasya Daivad Adharma Slishyasya Sudokitasya Anugrahayena Charanti Nunam Bhutani Bhavyani Janardanasya. Translation, O my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on the earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To be obedient to the wishes of the Supreme Lord is the natural position of every living entity, but due only to past misdeeds, a living being becomes averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord and suffers all the miseries of material existence. No one has anything to do but render devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. Therefore, any activity other than transcendental loving service to the Lord is more or less a rebellious action against the Supreme Will. All fruitive activity, empirical philosophy, and mysticism are more or less against the sense of subordination to the Lord. And any living entity engaged in such rebellious activity is more or less condemned by the laws of material nature, which work under the subordination of the Lord. Great unalloyed devotees of the Lord are compassionate towards the fallen, and therefore they travel all over the world with the mission of bringing souls back to Godhead, back to home. Such pure devotees of the Lord carry the message of Godhead in order to deliver the fallen souls, and therefore the common man who is bewildered by the influence of the external energy of the Lord should avail himself of their association. So the verse again. Janasya Krishnad Vimukhasya Daivat Adharma Shilasya Sudhukitasya Anugrahayena Charanti Nunam Bhutani Bhavyani Janardanasya. O my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on the earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord. Very nice section of Srimad Bhagavatam. This introductory questioning by Vidura to Maitreya, similar in the setting to the wonderful discussion between the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka, and the very, very qualified Suta Goswami, similar to the wonderful exchange between Maharaj Parikshit and Srimad Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami, the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. The qualification of, both qualifications are necessary. Qualification of a suitable speaker, qualification of a suitable receiver of the message, and some of the preliminary verses in this section describe the eminent qualification of Maitreya and the eminent qualification of Vidura. So, pardon me while I glorify both of those great souls for a little bit. Even when Vidura, before he left the royal palace, going on pilgrimage to purify himself from the contaminating association of Hastinapur and all the intrigue and stuff that happens when you put Asuric people in a position where they're eager for power. He had gone on pilgrimage. He left not out of, you know, being mad. He was unhappy with the diabolical behavior of Duryodhana and Dushasana and all of the other cohorts and his diabolical, not just adharmic, but asuric, just horrible behavior. And being the younger brother of Dhritarashtra, he tried. Mahabharata describes so many ways he tried. He tried and he tried and he tried and he... One section, he spent the whole night, all night long, till the sun rise in the next morning, explaining to Dhritarashtra, he can't continue to do this. And Dhritarashtra said the same thing that he said to Akura later on. What you say is right, but I can't help myself. I'm attached. I can't do the right thing. I have to do this thing. So he tried. But when he saw it, there's no more service for me here, he left. He left his bow by the door, symbolizing, now I don't have to make this awful decision on which side will I fight. There's no indication, at least, that he even went to say goodbye to his wife. He just went. See, even while he was there in Hastinapur, he was recognized as the most, along with Bhishma and Kripacharya, the most learned person. In fact, he's the only one that spoke up. Everyone else was silent. He spoke up against the action of Dushasana. So, in other words, he was way up there. And everyone knew it. Everyone knew it. And then when he left, his purpose in leaving, the Acharya's comment, he could have just gone to Krishna. He's Krishna's dear devotee. He's going to leave Hastinapur, no more service. Where do you go? You go to Krishna. But he didn't go to Krishna. He felt so much contamination. I need to purify myself before I go to Krishna. So he went to purify himself by going to the pilgrimage places and heard from the saintly persons there. And then this wonderful exchange where by the gift of Krishna, he was able to hear the whole subject matter of Krishna's final words. He didn't have MP3 recorders or this camera thing. He just had Maitreya, who heard directly from Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita. Could you imagine? Could you imagine? Right after Krishna's final words are spoken, I mean, just the verses that precede this text 3, Vidura was like tingling in ecstasy, that sad that Krishna has departed, but so much appreciating the affection that Krishna thought of him and spoke of him just before he departed. Giving Maitreya a service very soon, just a few days. Vidura is going to come right here. And I want you to explain everything that you heard to Vidura, because he's very dear to me. And Vidura was very dear to Krishna. So we hear in the first canto, chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home. Just a little mention at the beginning. That Vidura went on pilgrimage, and he spent some time with Maitreya, and became fully satisfied to his heart's content, and then he went back to Hastinapur. I did some calculation of how, it's based on scriptural reference, something like around 34 years of pilgrimage. We go on pilgrimage sometimes. We go to visit Vrindavan or Mayapur, and we spend a little while. It was a long pilgrimage. Very committed to purifying himself, Vidura. And when he was done, he wasn't just like learned Vidura. He was perfectly realized, we could say, Uttama Bhagavat. Of course, from Leela, he's Yamaraj. He's one of the Mahajans. That's who he is. But what to speak of hearing directly from Maitreya, and what was Maitreya's qualification? He heard directly from Krishna. Previously, Maitreya wasn't of the same caliber, certainly, as Uddhava, but having heard from Krishna in this way, most qualified, absolutely most qualified. And now Vidura is in the position of qualified receiver, hearing from the qualified speaker. And the qualification of Maitreya, great mystic, great yogi, vastly learned personality, but more than that, he's now heard directly from Krishna. And what he heard was Krishna speaking to Uddhava. So it wasn't like an ordinary conversation. It was a very special, special conversation. And he heard it directly. And he had fully assimilated that understanding. Krishna gave him the service to speak this message to Vidura. Like, not casual, directly. Speak this message to Vidura. Wow, what a setup. This is a very, very special dialogue. So special is this dialogue that it spans several cantos. You know, we say Srimad Bhagavatam is a discussion between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. He's instructing Maharaj Parikshit. You know, a big part of it is Maitreya instructing Vidura, narrated by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. Very, very elevated. So after Vidura hears, who can imagine he was so dear to Krishna, what he felt, Krishna's departed, we are never going to see him again. Because he had this conversation, previous chapter, with Uddhava. And Uddhava, that's a whole other wonderful, wonderful section. Did you cover that during the GBC College, that section? Oh my goodness. That's such a wonderful section. Vidura, Uddhava. And Vidura hears from Uddhava. But Uddhava says, I have to go now. Krishna gave me some service. But more qualified than me, he's senior to me in many ways, is Maitreya. And Krishna said that he wanted Maitreya to deliver knowledge to you. So go find Maitreya. I have to go now. Krishna gave me some service. So just before this, he finds Maitreya after traveling several days. Imagine taking a walk down the road somewhere, traveling for several days and finding Maitreya. No GPS, no cell phone. How did he find Maitreya? Somewhere that way. He found Maitreya. And he knew that Krishna wanted him to hear from Maitreya. Imagine what he was feeling. And what's the first question he asks? Just yesterday's verse. The first question. Living entities are entangled in fruitive activities. How to gain release from fruitive activities? That's the first question. I mean, there's so many things you could have asked. So many things you could have asked. And question. Is it that Vidura didn't know the answer? Vidura just kind of, I heard something about fruitive activities and how it's binding upon the conditioned soul. And could you describe, you know, I don't know the way that we can get released. He knows. He's a highly learned person. So what's he asking? He's not just asking for information. He's asking for the potency of realization of Maitreya to be transmitted to him, so that he could be released from the affinity for fruitive activities. Later on in this canto, 3, there's a discussion between Devahuti and Lord Kapiladev. And her question is the same question. She says it a little differently, but it's the same question. And her question, the circumstance, briefly, just go visit chapter 25 of Canto 3. She says to Lord Kapila, her son, "You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know that because Lord Brahma said it. My husband said that Lord Vishnu came and said that you will have as a son the personality of Godhead. You're the personality of God. You're not just my son." But my dear husband, Kardama Muni, he's just gone. And we've been together for tens of thousands of years and I'm very attached. And my mind is reeling with disturbance over attachment to family members, and I know the philosophy. I'm paraphrasing. I know the philosophy, but can you instruct me how to become free from undue attachment to the bodily conception of life, and with that, fruitive activities and family attachment? I know that it's your illusory potency that's done it. And since it's your lousy potency, you can remove it. Can you remove it? But it's not just like, you know, a magic trick where, okay, there's the illusory potency and then now it's gone away. There's something that the individual who's deluded by the illusory potency must do. And one of the things they must do is receive mercy. There's two things. They have to have proper knowledge and act according to proper knowledge with faith, and they have to be eager to receive descending mercy. So we see in Vidura's question the same spirit as Devahuti had. It's not just information, it's deeper realization, disconnecting us from affinity for matter, affinity for joying the temporary. Looking at Gaudiya, I was just in Beijing immediately before coming here, and it's the national holidays in China from October 1st to the 7th, and it's a fantastic time to gather the devotees together because people aren't working. People in China like to work. Well, at least they like the fruit of the work very much. Very much. But it's a nice time. So the topic that I discussed was Harinam Chintamani. And fits in perfectly. So I'll just connect how it fits in perfectly with this discussion right here. The first chapter of Harinam Chintamani is Haridas Thakur describing the glories of the holy name. And then the second chapter is receiving the holy name. So first recognize what it is. So that's part of what's in this verse. Great saintly persons, inspired by compassion, they traverse the earth in order to relieve the conditioned souls of their affinity for matter and deliver them back to Godhead. So there's the spirit of compassion, and then what the spirit of compassion, true compassion, delivers. It's not something that's temporary, limited. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or through Haridas Thakur, he makes it very clear. There's direct devotional service and indirect activities that are very elevated within the Vedic literature. And even mixed devotional service. So there's, Prabhupada calls them high-grade activities. And they're listed, you know, karmakanda, gyanakanda, and attraction or affinity for mystic power, the process of yoga. Karma, gyan, and yoga. And they, minus bhakti, on their own, there's potency in them. But this is so nice, the potency that's there within Krishna, because he's Shaktiman, he can invest potency. He's the source of the Vedas. So he can invest potency in the Karmakanda section to give temporary limited fruits. He can invest some of his potency in the Gyanakanda section that the Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it Nirvishesha Shakti, something like that. The potency to enter into a state of neutrality. But the holy name and the process of devotional service that's unmixed has everything. So within your $1 million, you have your $10 and $100 issues taken care of. You don't need the other ones. You need this one. So those that are delivering the message of devotional service recognize, they know that there's obstacles, and that's in receiving the holy name, accepting the holy name. That's this second chapter. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's three obstacles. There's mist and clouds, and the mist is ignorance. So what's the antidote for ignorance? Knowledge. So the compassionate souls, they deliver knowledge. But they, you know, deliver knowledge and deliver knowledge and deliver knowledge. Is that the receiver is off, it's not going to go in. One will stay in darkness. The sun may be shining, but if you hide under a rock, it's dark. You have to step out of underneath the rock and receive the sunshine. Then it's light. Knowledge requires the proper receiver. But even knowledge of bhakti, which deliverers of the message of bhakti deliver. They deliver the message of bhakti. So many people know the message of bhakti, and they're holding on to other things. Mixed devotional service. So then he goes to the next, and there's these clouds. So like, it's just, the metaphor is very beautiful. When the sun that's in the sky gives its light, similarly, the holy name, when it enters into the sky of the heart, it's a metaphor, it's poetry. Like, the heart is like a sky, and the holy name enters the heart. But if there's ignorance, mist of ignorance, and if there's clouds of anarthas that arise from offenses, then the brilliance of the sun, the pure holy name, isn't going to radiate in the heart, and will still then be in this unfortunate circumstance of struggling. Anybody want to volunteer that they're beyond struggling? I don't see any hands. So that where to come to the Shuddha Nam stage requires going beyond the Namabhas, chanting without offense. And there's these three categories. It directly relates to what's said here. Go back to the ignorance, the root of that, the root of all suffering. Question. Those of you that have heard Prabhupada speak, when Prabhupada starts the sentence, the root of all suffering is, and you fill in the blank, what goes there? Ignorance, avidya. The root of all suffering is avidya. The antidote for avidya is knowledge. But then we may receive knowledge kind of, you know, it's just information kind of, and not receive it in the heart. Because there's this mist of ignorance that we could say yes, but behave no. Like, you know, we're not this body. And then we behave according to the designation of the body. So Varnashram has its place, but it's indirect. Without this brilliance of the transcendental position of, and so he Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, or Haridas Thakur says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, it's by the mercy of the spiritual master, not just he gives knowledge, but there's a potency with that knowledge. There's descending mercy, not just information. There's descending mercy that one must receive. And same with this other one, the Asat Trishna. There's three. Asat Trishna. Trishna means thirst. And asat means the temporary. Thirst for the temporary. And then he's got a whole long list in Bhajana Rehasya, like eight things. Thirst for the temporary is in different categories. And one of them is wanting mystic power, another is wanting liberation, another is wanting and pious, you know, elevation and prosperous life and thirst for the temporary. And if the temporary doesn't fit, then, you know, I'm not going to do my devotional service. Radhana Swami, did you get a chance to read Yogeshwar's book, this new book he's publishing? He sent me two chapters to, like, read and write something in appreciation for the book that's going to go in the book. So one of those chapters is the abject humility with which Prabhupada lived. He's a sadhu living in Vrindavan, living at the Radha Damodar temple. He's attached to Radha Damodar. He's right across from Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi. And he leaves to get on a boat, to risk his life, to come find people he doesn't even know. Living in the most austere conditions. So one of the things that he mentioned was the devotees at that time were so poor, they had one towel. And those devotees that slept in 26 Second Avenue on the storefront, they would share their one towel with Prabhupada. They come and shower in Prabhupada's room and share the towel. They were so poor. There's a grain of rice in the pot. So why did he do that? Transcendental compassion, not like... The devotees didn't know any better. And he wasn't standing on formality that you should know better. He was wanting to just give. And not just give information, but give a life of devotion. Whew. Where are we on the scale of compassion compared to such great souls? So the compassion is not just to be learned and give knowledge, but with compassion to have the desire that people are no longer thirsting for the impermanent. Just another little quote. I'll say it twice because it's powerful. On more than one occasion, I heard Srila Prabhupada say, one of the foremost duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct the disciple on the abject futility of finding happiness in fruitive activities. Say it again. And think, as you're hearing it again, how many times you've heard Prabhupada say it over and over and over. And it's not just Prabhupada, it's the Bhagavatam. This is Vidura, who's way up there, and Maitreya, who's way up there. He could ask him anything, and he's asking about fruitive activities. And it's not because he doesn't know the answer to the question. He wants to deepen his realization, because it's fundamentally essential. The Asat Krishna factor blocks us from receiving the pure holy name. He wants to hear about Krishna, but he's asking about the fruit, the clouds. How to get rid of those clouds so I can receive the pure holy name, or can enter into pure devotional service. So here we go again. One of the most essential duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct the disciple about the abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. Because you can't go beyond into transcendence as long as there's attachment for, or affinity for, enjoying happiness through fruitive activities, or Asat Krishna. You can't receive the pure holy name. We'll just continue. So a compassionate teacher wants the student to go beyond into the realm of pure devotional service, and we should want to, so that from our side, the compassionate teacher needs a good student. We need to become good students. Even if we're not there yet, if we hear the message enough times, the cloud might start to dissipate a little bit. And then we realize, yes, I need to let go. But to let go, it's something like chanting with full attention. Because according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Harinam Chintamani and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Madhurya Kandambani, the most essential feature that prevents us from getting to pure chanting is this inattentiveness. And inattentiveness has its different categories too. But, you know, affinity for enjoying the temporary. We got to get it. Not just like, okay, now I know that word, Asat Krishna, and I can say it in a class. But to go beyond that into letting go of that happiness for a greater happiness. And what's the greater happiness? Our direct relationship with Krishna. Serving Krishna. Serving Krishna. And serving Krishna means serving the devotees. Isn't it? Isn't that what our teaching says? And so the spirit of not just doing something, but the spirit of finding happiness in serving the devotees. Such a simple message. It's such a basic message. And our life, you know, taken in a broad sense, the institution of the Hare Krishna movement, of just having this dialogue with a devotee from America, who's born in an Indian family, but he's, a free thinker, like young people are these days in the West. He's a free thinker. And he's not really sure about, you know, the institution that says one thing and does another thing. He's not sure about that. You know, where do I fit in? Because, anyway, it's going to be an interesting, when I get back, we're going to have a direct conversation. But it's not just people in the West. It's anyone who's thinking carefully. We want to come to a certain level, and someone may not, so there's another thing, somebody may not fit at that particular moment in that stage. What's their place in the institution? What's the role of compassion? Where do you draw the line? Thoughtful. food for thought. So, one last point, because it's 22 after already. There's a nice word in the first line, Janasya Krishnad Vi Mukasha Daivad. Vi Mukasya. Mukha means face. And Vi Mukasya, Prabhupada has translated it, of the one who has turned his face against the Lord. Vi Mukasya Daivad. Daivat, by the influence of the external energy. In his Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami asks this very potent question, which is, how does material existence begin? And the logic is very simple. If you know how material existence begins, you know how to get out of material existence. Just like, how did we get up here to the temple? And we came up those stairs, most of us at least, came up those stairs. So how do we leave the temple? We go down the stairs. Very simple. You know, where's the exit? There's the exit. Okay. That's how I entered. How do we enter the material world? And then he suggests, some people say this, and some people say, then after each one suggestion, he says, no, because. Then he comes up with one that he says, this is the reason. It's the same as this one, Vimukasya. It's Bahir Mukha Jeev, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur conveniently presents in Harinam Chintamani also. That's the ignorance. That's the root. That's the, you know, primordial ignorance. We ignored Krishna. We turned our mukha away from Krishna. Bahir mukha jeev. Daivat. By the influence of the external energy. So what's the solution? Turn your attention again to Krishna. Not so easy. Not so easy. Little anecdotal story. You're doing really good job. Everyone's really awake. This is nice. Good group. So, I was attending, anecdotal. I was attending a program at some remote place, and the host had never conducted a program before. They were new devotees, new practicing devotees, and they had invited 30 families. So they were really excited and said, can you do an introductory class? Because these are all new people, they're just our friends. They don't know anything about Krishna consciousness. So I said, please understand, although 30 people said that they will come, the rule is 50% will come, not 30, but maybe 15, and they'll come in time for prasadam. They said, no, 30, they've said they come. I said, okay, so you can just see. So that's what happened. The little gathering of the devotee families were there, and the guests were not there yet. So I decided I would have the children sit in the front, because guests like it when their children learn about spiritual values, because the children need spiritual values. The parents don't feel they need spiritual values. They feel the children. So I was interacting with the children. They were sitting in the front. So I did this little, you know, thing with the children. Okay, I have a question, but before you answer the question, you got to raise your hand. Don't blurt out the answer. So here we go. I'm a living entity, and I decide I have this rebellious spirit towards Krishna, and Krishna makes a very clever arrangement. He gives me a situation where it looks like there's enjoyment, but there's no enjoyment. It's called the material world, and I try. Yeah, I go to school. I get, you know, a good education, and I try to find arrangements to get enjoyment. It doesn't quite work, so I adjust it this way. It doesn't quite work. Adjust it that way. It doesn't quite work. I live my whole life that way and die. Take birth again and try it again and try it again and try it again. At a certain point in time, a little light goes on that says, this isn't a good program. I want to go back to Krishna. So, the question is, why isn't it just we can just do a 180-degree U-turn and go back to Krishna? Why isn't it so simple? We can just do that. So then they're all jumpy and giggly and, you know, raising their hands, and I called on some and they said nothing, and, you know, that kind of a scene. And one little girl up front, after everyone stopped giggling, she raised her hand and said, "The soul wants to go to Krishna, but the senses want to enjoy." Little girl. Then another little boy said, "Yeah, the soul wants to go to Krishna, but the ego is attached to a sense of independence from Krishna." I said, "Wow." You guys have understood the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So it's not just compassion of giving knowledge. That's an essential, can't miss it step. But there's a greater degree of compassion. And now I'll end with this. In both of these mists of ignorance and clouds of offenses or anarthas that arise from offenses, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's the descending mercy. It's Krishna is the deliverer. And through the representative of Krishna, through the spiritual master, he gives that which dispels. So then he uses this term, I forget the Sanskrit. It ends in bala. Krishna bhakti bala, something like that. That there's a strength to go beyond the struggle that one can have the possibility of when there's this submission into the representatives of Krishna, which is exactly what Vidura is doing. Vidura is a great devotee. He's not a, you know, Bhakta Vidura. He's a great devotee. But he's submitting to one who has heard from Krishna because Krishna wanted him to hear. And he's submitting himself in this way. And then comes this bala, the spiritual strength that we need. Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, in the prayers by the personified Vedas, that chapter 2 of Krishna book, canto 10. In order to be successful in spiritual life, one requires spiritual strength. And spiritual strength comes from Balaram. So in order to be successful, you need the mercy of Balaram. You need that spiritual strength. And who is Balaram's representative? The spiritual master, or those who take the position of compassionately delivering Krishna's message. So he's starting off on the right foot. He's instructing us how we should start off on the right foot by his asking the question that he's asking. And he's glorifying those persons that represent Krishna. That's an essential affective component of the heart, is to have proper regard and appreciation for such souls. And then the receiver's on. And the broadcaster, Maitreya, is really happy to broadcast because he knows, hey, the receiver's on. Really good. And he asks the continuing part of this, he asks wonderful questions, and then several chapters are just to answer those wonderful questions. So we'll hear some more starting tomorrow. It's already 8:30. Class is supposed to be over. Any questions or comments? Yes, Samhar Prabhu.
Of course, when we're dealing with great personalities, there's a certain element of Leela involved. But still, it's instructive for us. So I'm not sure whether it was in a purport or one of the verses in the section where it's mentioned that probably when you look at Vidura and Uddhava were actually more advanced in bhakti than Maitreya, although Maitreya was, you know, a very, very great soul in so many ways. Yeah. But yet, because Maitreya was senior, is one of the reasons why, you know, why Vidura, you know, yes, approached him or Uddhava to listen to him. So I was wondering, when you were talking about that this is, it's more than just giving facts in terms of transmitting knowledge, but there's also the mercy involved. Is there some element of that, of seniority that, I don't know, I'm trying to understand that. Is there something that gives some special mercy because he was a senior personality? Or?
This is my understanding, and other learned devotees in the audience may have a different perspective, and that's probably going to be the case. The seniority of Maitreya was, as you said it, it's one of the considerations, and that's the consideration, or one of the considerations that Uddhava pointed to, which was Maitreya is senior, so you have questions. Etiquette-wise, a cultured person defers to the senior. But that's not the only aspect. Uddhava had a service, and the service particularly was given to him to sustain his life after Krishna departed. And it wasn't to give that instruction to Vidura. Krishna said, Maitreya, you instruct. So that's at least my perspective on this is, that's the superseding element, is Krishna wanted Maitreya. So Uddhava deferred to Maitreya because Krishna wanted Maitreya. Yeah. Yeah, and it cultured people observe culture. And Uddhava was a cultured person. So it's not a zero, but it's not the necessarily the main reason why he deferred to Maitreya. He had his service, and he was eager to carry out the service because devotees like to have some assignment of service and carry out the service. On the course of carrying out one's service, one may do other services. But at least in this case, Maitreya was given this other service. That's my understanding. Others could... Anyone else want to add? Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, you want to add something? Okay. Okay. Well, we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.